Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are looking at something pretty fascinating at the heart of Brazilian democracy. It's this paradox of self-preservation.
Yeah, the sources we're looking at call it blandigem. It literally means shielding or armoring.
And it just feels, it feels fundamentally off when the highest bodies of the state, the ones meant to provide stability, are instead focused on building armor to protect themselves from each other.
Exactly. It suggests there's a real anomaly in the system, not just a disagreement, but a deep institutional stress.
So that's our mission for this deep dive. We're going to unpack this symptom, this institutional insecurity. We'll look at two pretty distinct attempts at this blandigem.
One from the legislative side, which failed, and then a, shall we say, more strategic judicial countermove.
And then, and I think this is the most important part, we're going to contrast all of that political gamesmanship with what shielding actually looks like for the ordinary Brazilian citizen.
It's a stark difference.
Now, this deep dive is based on the 10th volume of Alem do Artigo. The subtitle is Reflections Based on the Texts of Sergio Tamer.
And Tamer is a professor, a lawyer, and the president of the CECGP.
Right. And before we get into it, just a quick reminder for you that Alem do Artigo is now also available on Spotify.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you can listen on the mobile or computer app wherever you are. Just search for Alem do Artigo on Spotify, and we'll meet you there.
So we're really analyzing the specific symptoms laid out in Tamer's work, and they all seem to point toward a system under some serious pressure.
Okay, so let's start with that first attempt at armor, the one that came from the legislative branch, from Congress, the PEC de Blindagem.
The constitutional amendment proposal for shielding.
And the source says this was a direct reaction, right?
Right.
Senators and deputies felt they were being, for lack of a better term, politically persecuted by the Supreme Court, the STF.
They didn't just feel it. I mean, the court had been pretty aggressive. The STF was issuing these injunctions, they're called liminaires, in ongoing cases.
And these weren't just slaps on the wrist.
No, not at all. These were penalties, various sanctions, sometimes even resulting in arrests of legislators. So you can imagine they felt this urgent need for protection from the judicial branch.
So they try to shield themselves with a law, but it completely flops.
It flopped hard. It do comos burros nagua, as they say. The STF ministers themselves called it unconstitutional before it even got a proper vote.
But the perception, the name it got, that was maybe even more damaging. How did it get saddled with the nickname Peck de Bandagem, the Peck of Banditry?
It was a PR nightmare for them. The narrative that stuck, and it stuck fast, was that this bill would create a loophole.
A loophole for who?
For organized crime. The allegation was that if this passed, members of groups like the CV and the PCC would just, you know, run for office specifically to get absolute legal immunity.
So a law that was meant as an institutional defense gets framed as a welcome mat for criminals.
Exactly. And whether that was the legal reality or not, it didn't matter. The perception battle was lost from day one.
Okay, so the legislative branch fails to build its armor. Then Tamer's article pivots. It says the Supreme Court itself is now seeking its own protection.
And this judicial countermove, the source is very clear, was driven by a very specific fear.
The 2026 Senate elections.
That's it. The political red light, as the source puts it, went on in Brasilia because the opposition was being very public about its goals.
This wasn't some backroom rumor.
No, it was a declared strategy, they said. We're going to win a majority in the Senate, rescue former President Bolsonaro, and this is the key part vote to impeach at least four STF ministers.
That is a direct threat, a direct institutional challenge. So the court responds. The source says Minister Gilmar Mendes, the longest-serving minister, the decano, he led the charge.
He did, and the response was, well, surgically precise. They decided to restructure the handling of the impeachment law from 1950, Law 1.079.
Okay, so what was the critical change? What did they actually do?
They created a bottleneck.
Yeah.
A massive one. Before this change, a number of different people could start the impeachment process.
And now?
Now, the power to propose the action, to even get the ball rolling, is granted exclusively to the Prosecutor General of the Republic, the PGR.
Wait, hold on. So the Senate still gets the final say. They're the ones who judge the case?
Yes. They're still the judging body, the jury, if you will.
But they can't start the trial. They have to wait for the PGR, and only the PGR, to bring them a case.
Precisely. It's a filter, and a very powerful one.
This raises a huge question for democracy, doesn't it? I mean, is this a legitimate institutional safeguard, or is this the judiciary basically kneecapping a democratic check on its own power?
That's the billion-dollar question. It's all about the balance of power. By giving that exclusive right to the PGR, who is, you know, the chief federal prosecutor, the SDF has put a huge political buffer between itself and Congress.
A moat.
A moat is a perfect way to put it. A moat against what the source calls an inimiga quanto ferida opposition, one that's both hostile and politically wounded. This is pure self-preservation against political retaliation.
So let's dig into why they were so afraid. The source says their fear, their temer, was justified. If a hostile Senate could start these proceedings without that PGR filter, what kind of charges could they face? What are these crimes of responsibility?
Well, the list is interesting because a lot of the items on it are, let's say they're open to political interpretation. They could easily be weaponized.
Okay, like what?
Okay, first, altering a decision or a vote after it's already been cast in session, unless it's part of a formal appeal, of course. Second, ruling on a case where you are legally compromised or biased.
Those seem pretty straightforward. But what about the more subjective ones, the ones that opposition could really run with?
Right. Number three is a big one, especially today. Exercising political partisan activity. I mean, that accusation gets thrown at judges all the time.
All the time.
Then there's number four, being patently dissidioso, which means being grossly negligent or chronically slow in doing your job.
And the last one.
Number five is maybe the broadest of all. Proceeding in a way that is incompatible with the honor, dignity, and decorum of your office.
Wow. Honor, dignity, and decorum. I mean, a politically motivated opposition could drive a truck through that definition.
They absolutely could. And we can't forget there are also budget crimes listed in Article 39A that apply to the president of the STF. So when you look at that whole list, you see why securing that PGR filter was so critical for their own blindagem.
So the source really makes a case that this list validates the minister's fear.
Mm-hmm.
They saw a future hostile Senate majority coming and built their defense ahead of time.
That's the argument, yes.
Okay. We spent all this time talking about institutional armor, legal shields, pecs. But Tamer's article makes this powerful shift, a pivot to what this all really means.
This is the heart of his argument, I think. He wants us to look at the contrast, the real contrast. How does the idea of blindagem play out for the general public?
And it's a completely different world.
A different universe. While the justices in Brasilia are worried about the wording of a 1950 law, the average citizen is facing a total breakdown of what's called incolumidad publica, public safety.
The source calls daily life a fearsome battlefield.
It's a strong phrase, but it reflects a reality. The lack of control over crime has turned streets, buses, even people's own homes into dangerous places.
And this leads to what the source calls the authentic blindagem, the real shielding.
Yes. It's not a legal strategy. It's an individual, private response to a massive collective institutional failure.
So what does that actually look like? The source gives specific examples.
It's what you see every day. It's electric fences and barbed wire going up around houses. It's people welding steel plates onto their cars to armor them.
Literally creating their own armored vehicles.
Literally. Doing, as the source says, whatever else is possible for the common mortal just to feel safe.
And the argument here is so clear. This private individual shielding against violence, that should be the real concern of the parliamentarians and the ministers.
Because the public is lacking its most basic constitutional protection. These individual measures, the fences, the armored cars, they're all just symptoms of a deeper institutional failure.
The fact that people have to self-armor their lives proves the system is failing its most basic duty.
Which is to provide peace and dignity in ordinary life.
So we're left with this incredibly stark picture. At the top, you have institutional shielding, a failed PEC, a successful legal restructuring, all of it signaling deep uncertainty and insecurity.
While at the bottom, you have citizen fielding, private attempts to manage the risks created by that collective failure. It confirms the system is struggling to protect its own foundation, the people.
And the solution offered by the source isn't more armor. It's not more legal walls.
No, it's political maturity. It's an immediate rebalancing or re-equilibrium in the relationship between the powers.
But until that happens.
Until that happens, the source ends with that haunting phrase, Haja Blindagem, which basically means the shielding just continues on all levels.
And that really leads us to the final thought we want to leave you with, which builds directly on this dichotomy Tamer lays out.
Right.
If the absolute bedrock of a functioning democracy is its ability to protect its citizens, to provide public safety, what does it signal when the entire institutional focus shifts inward? To self-preservation.
When the high courts and the legislatures become so preoccupied with their own legal self-defense, with securing their own power and their own futures, who is left? Who is left to champion the blindedom that actually
The
matters?
one that restores peace and security and dignity to the ordinary life of the citizen.
That's the real crisis that's kind of hidden behind all these sophisticated legal maneuvers.
A vital question and some deep insight from the work of Sergio Tamer. That's all the time we have for this deep dive. We'll meet you next time.